This episode is proudly brought to you from 99designs by Vista, a global creative platform that makes it easy for you to work with professional freelance designers from around the world.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey, Founder fam, welcome back to another episode of the Founder Podcast. Today, we're talking to Roland Peralta. He's the co-founder and chief innovation officer of Nutrafol, who create hair growth supplements to combat hair loss in men and women. Now, this company was born out of his own experience with thyroid cancer and rheumatoid arthritis. Roland began to research and use nutraceuticals to treat his own health conditions, and he soon realized his hair growth had improved in the process. And from there, he and his team partnered with doctors and researchers to develop Nutrafol to what it is today. So if you want to learn what it takes to build a world-class supplement company with a true-to-heart mission, then please welcome to the podcast, Roland Peralta. The first question that I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job, aka how did you find yourself doing the work you're doing today?
Do we have enough time to answer that question? So I'm a co-founder at Nutrafol, and I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in 2010. And I was looking for a natural way to address some of the symptoms. And at the time, the pharmaceutical companies had created some biologics that had some known side effects. And I had I always had an interest in botanicals and natural ways of treating things, essentially also known as a biohacker, right? In that research, I had found my cure, my medicine, really a botanical that was able to keep all of my symptoms at bay. And one of the side benefits of that, 6 months in, I had no symptoms. My rheumatoid arthritis had subsided. And the one of the side benefits was that my hair quality had changed. And so that set off an aha moment. My very good friend, Georgios Tetis, who's the CEO of Nutrafol today and co-founder, had commented on my hair, and I thought nothing of it. And he had noticed that I had had a change in the way that I had looked. And he specifically said, "Your hair looks good. What are you doing?" And I didn't really connect the dots at the time, but he basically, we had a conversation. I told him what was happening in my life. And in that moment, he had confided in me that he had had, so hair became the topic, not rheumatoid arthritis in that moment. And so he had, hair now is the topic of discussion. He now confides in me that he was taking Propecia, finasteride, a pharmaceutical drug that inhibits the DHT hormone, which is the typical root cause in androgenic alopecia. That's the hair loss that people call genetic hair loss or predisposition to genetic hair loss. And so he had confided that he had been taking the drug for 10 years and had had some hair loss over the years. He was a model and an engineer. He had confided that he had had some hair loss, but he had also confided that he had had intermittent sexual dysfunction as a result of taking the drugs. So I said, come over to my house for dinner. Let's have a conversation around hair. We can do some research together and see if we could find you an alternative. Fast forward, that research dinner turned into a 10-year relationship, and here we are today. So it was it all started with this desire to understand biology and really advocate for oneself, right? So becoming one's advocate on health is critical in today's society. There's a lot of information out there that physicians are not necessarily aware of and on top of, but through research, we find many, many answers.
Interesting. So Nutrafol wasn't your first venture, right?
No, this was my third. My initial experience as an entrepreneur was in the fashion industry. I'd started a company in my early 20s, sold it when I was 32. I was importing women's clothing from China, from Korea, from India. Was servicing a lot of large retailers in the United States. Quickly became one of the largest importers of silks in the US back in the 90s. I don't miss the fashion business at all.
There you go. And then what was your second venture?
My second venture was I was in the hair salon business for about a minute with the hope of one day launching a hair care product line. I did that for about 8 years, and that was somewhat of a failed venture. I would say that was not the favorite chapter of my story as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, why?
It was challenging, and I think the biggest challenge there was working with business partners that. You are not necessarily aligned with. I think that's a really important lesson in being an entrepreneur, and that is in making sure that you've chosen your partners wisely, ensuring that you're aligned, you have the same vision, you have the same values. I think values are critical, the same work ethic. If none of that is there, you eventually have a problem and became problematic. So it was really a failed venture as a result of not having a good partnership at the time, really.
And then how long after did you launch Nutrafol?
I would say two years later, having worked in a hair salon, I had witnessed a lot of women coming through the salon and complaining about hair loss in women in their 20s and 30s. And that was a very interesting phenomenon. I thought hair loss was limited to men at the time. And I began connecting the dots, and I began to realize that hair loss started at my home. I had three sisters that were all losing their hair and had probably spent 10, 15 years with progressive hair thinning. Two brothers that were practically bald. My dad was bald. But it was an interesting to witness women who were healthy and basically would say, I eat well, I have a healthy lifestyle, and yet I'm losing my hair and I can't put my finger on it. At the time, dermatologists were recommending biotin as a remedy, and that of course didn't lead to much in the way of resolving the hair thinning that women were reporting.
And you describe yourself as a biohacker. What does that mean to you?
Like tinkering with cells. My passion is diving into the scientific literature and searching for answers and really just diving into the biology of cellular biology, really, and understanding how the body works, how drugs work, and really reverse engineering those mechanisms of action and in order to find botanicals that have the same capacity or similar capacities to drugs that may have been developed to target those specific indications. So the power of botanicals, the wisdom of plants. Plants today are plant medicines, really, and there's so much wisdom in ancient medicine that we're only beginning to rediscover today, and finally we're seeing tremendous investment going into the research behind these plants and the power of these plants. And very often pharmaceutical companies use these plants to create bioidentical drugs, right? So they're effectively finding the power of the plants and then creating synthetic versions of those plants because of what they know, right? So biohacking is the art of using nature as your medicine.
Yeah, interesting. So let's jump into Nutrafol. So you had this interesting realization around the thinning of your hair started to get thicker. And what did it look like after you partnered with your co-founder? Like, what happened next when you had this discovery?
So what we discovered was that, so in the spirit of the biohacking mindset, what we discovered was that there were naturals that were able to target the very same enzymes that the finasteride, the Propecia, that my business partner was using. And so we started there, and we were able to uncover that there were dozens of articles in the scientific literature that supported the use of these naturals to target the inhibition of the DHT hormone. And so that was enough to compel my partner to reconsider the use of finasteride as a way to prevent hair shedding, as a way to minimize his hair thinning. But what we really discovered in our research was that, and because I had brought in that conversation of women are losing their hair as well, and my sisters are losing their hair, I've seen hundreds of women in my previous business complaining about hair loss. And women had very few options at the time. This was back in 2012, 2013. So what we had uncovered and really truly discovered was that there was such a big white space in the way that in of all the products that were available in the market at the time that were treating hair thinning, the white space we found was to be stress. And stress was a very, very important target. So doctors talked about stress being at the root of hair thinning, of excess hair shedding. But there were no products at the time that were created to target that specific root cause. And so that made no sense to us. Like, how is it possible that we know what is at the root of hair? We know that stress is a trigger of hair thinning and hair shedding, yet nobody's developing products that were able to target that. And at the time, physicians would advise patients to take an extra vacation, do some meditation, do some yoga. But in fact, Ayurvedic medicine had already, thousands of years ago, had already identified very powerful plants, what we now call stress adaptogens, that were able to target those root causes or stress-related hair thinning, hair shedding. So we were very lucky at around that time. There were some ingredient manufacturers that were creating pharmaceutical grade ingredients. These were naturals that had been used for thousands of years, but not quite studied clinically, that had been studied. So these were partners that invested millions in clinical research and were able to demonstrate that elevated cortisol is at the root of stress. And if you can target elevated cortisol with a natural ingredient, you were able to successfully lower those stress hormones, leading to a reduction of hair shedding, a reduction of hair thinning. So the opportunity for us was identify the multiple triggers. So as biohackers, we were able to identify multiple triggers and find next generation ingredients that were able to target those triggers. So really what we did was we changed the paradigm and the way that people viewed this problem. And we basically hypothesized that it was multiple triggers that led to these problems, not just a single gene, not a single problem, but multiple causes. And the best way to address it would be to effectively create a powerful cocktail that had powerful ingredients, next generation delivery systems, ingredients that had been clinically tested that showed evidence of efficacy targeting those specific root triggers. And that is ultimately how we landed with a product like Nutrafol.
Yeah, crazy. So talk to us about entering the market. How long did it take for you to get the product ready to be sold?
So it took us about 2 years. Georgios and I worked elbow to elbow. I had a small two bedroom on the Upper East Side of New York, and my desk was a big hardwood mahogany door that I threw over two filing cabinets, and I said, we need to be heads down on this project. And so we sat side by side for 18 months, working on the branding, working on the business plan, working on sourcing. It was quite an experience because neither one of us had any D2C experience. Neither one of us had ever launched a product in the wellness market or a supplement or a dietary supplement. We knew that the barrier to entry was very low in terms of the barrier to entry into the sector was low, but you still have to cross your T's and dot your I's and do things right, because essentially it's a self-regulated industry. So we spent almost 2 years in that apartment before we were able to get our first production order together. We self-funded. We probably, I think we put up about $50,000-$60,000 to finance this project. And the goal was live frugally. We were shopping at Costco once a month. I would stock my refrigerator and freezer up with cheap meats and rice and beans and pasta and greens. And we basically never left the apartment. We turned down business dinners, or rather we turned down dinners and drinks and parties. And so we were in that mindset of this is heads down. We're learning a lot. And we didn't quite have the resources to outsource a lot of the responsibilities that we wish we could have.
Yeah. What happened next? So it took you 2 years to launch. You launched. What happened?
So I had a friend who had reached out and said, "Roland, what are you up to these days?" I give him the update, and he says, "I've got an office in Nomad, and I've got extra space. If you want to come down and take some space for a few months until you're generating some revenue, by all means, you're welcome to use an office." So we packed up our things. We drop our things off, and then I run off to Burning Man for the week. That was in 2015. I come back on Monday, and Georgios had just been interviewed by Mashables.com, an online magazine. And at the time, we were probably generating maybe $10,000 a month in business. We had launched on Amazon. We hadn't yet quite launched our own website yet. But I returned from Burning Man, and I've got 30 missed phone calls from Georgios. I think I was getting a manicure and a pedicure at the time, because Burning Man is brutal on the hands and the feet. And I've got 30 missed phone calls. I finally pick up, and he says to me, "You've got to come to the office. The phones are ringing off the hook. We have hundreds of emails. Everything's going crazy." And this article runs where Georgios had, we were very lucky. We had a terrific little press piece that really was a tipping point in the very, very early days of our business. And that article was an article where Georgios had admitted in a very vulnerable moment that he had been experiencing sexual side effects from having taken the pharmaceutical that he was taking. And I think the article was titled "Get Laid or Get Laid Off." And so he admitted that in order for him to keep his job as a model, he had an engineering practice at the time. So we both were moonlighting. I had a day job, and he had his engineering consulting clients. And we would meet at nights, and we would be working on our project. And I finally left that job. And the article runs. He gets an interview. The article runs. He basically admits that in order to keep his hair and be a successful model, he needed to take these drugs, and unfortunately had experienced these side effects. Well, apparently sex sells, because 22 publications picked up the article and just ran different versions of that story on their sites. And I think our sales went from $10,000 to $100,000 a month. So it was an incredible exponential increase in business. And we were not ready. We were not ready for that moment. But we're entrepreneurs, we're survivors. And so we rolled up our sleeves, and there we are, packing boxes, shipping boxes to customers in Italy, to customers in Germany, to people, because our fulfillment center at the time couldn't handle international. So and the article ran all over the world. So we were, there we were at fielding customer service phone calls, packing our own boxes, shipping abroad. And that was the beginning of, that was truly the tipping point. And we never looked back. And we just, it took us a long time to get to $10,000 a month in sales. It was not easy. It didn't happen overnight. We had used Amazon as our launching platform. We eventually had our website. Our website was up at the time the Mashable articles ran, but it took us a very, very long time, because the sector is it's a very crowded sector, and there are a lot of people selling snake oil and making unsubstantiated claims. And they're selling products at $19, and they're not making very authentic claims. And so clearly, people who are desperate for solutions will try anything and everything. That was the beginning of this incredible growth that we had experienced over the years. One small press piece, and thinking about of all the press that we've received in the last 8 or 9 years, nothing compares to the power of that one article that ran at the very, very beginning of our journey.
Hey, Founder Fam, I want to take a quick break from the conversation to talk about a pain point for a lot of you out there, and that's finding quality design help to build your brand. Whether it's a logo, website, or packaging, you can spend hours trying to do it yourself and still end up with nothing. That's where 99 Designs by Vista comes in. With its contest model, you can invite an entire global creative community to participate in your project and submit ideas. It's like having an entire design department at your fingertips. And at Founder, we've worked with 99 Designs before in the past to create a special issue of our magazine, and it really transformed the quality of the project by having a bunch of concepts to choose from and being able to collaborate with creators from all over the world. From pitch to perfection, 99 Designs will be there with you every step of the way. They'll help you transform your idea in your head into a valuable piece of content or branding for your business. And together with 99 Designs, we're offering you a $30 discount on your first design contest. So just head to 99designs.com/founder to learn more or get started on your project today. Okay, now let's jump back into the episode. You said that it took a while to get to $10,000 a month. How long did it take?
Well, it took us probably about six months.
Yep. And you launched on Amazon.
Yeah, it was the easiest way to launch, right? I did not mention that during the periods of time where we were trying to launch on Amazon, on our own website, we were very diligently seeding the product, and seeding was such a critical strategy for our success, because I had given my sisters some product at very, very early and saw success. I saw their hair growing beautifully and the texture changing and the thinning was beginning to disappear and the shedding had stopped. So we knew that we had something that worked. I had seen success and Georgios had seen success. So we spent a lot of time making phone calls, reaching out to friends and friends of friends, and seeding it with hairstylists in New York, hairstylists in Los Angeles. We were very lucky that we were able to seed the product with a few key opinion leaders in dermatology that had started using the product as well, had given it to one of their family members. And within 3 to 4 months, we're beginning to hear great stories, success stories, testimonials. And so we were getting very excited about the prospect. This, it's working. People are saying that it's working. So we knew an important part of what we prioritized at the time was getting out and getting the product into the hands of professionals that would be able to talk about it with their clients, with their patients. And that seeding strategy really was the backbone of our success. I think it was much more successful than anyone could possibly ever imagine. Seeding really, and that was free. We were giving product away for free, right? We weren't charging. And meanwhile, we're having rice and beans and cheap meats for dinner and lunch and dinner every day, yet we're giving away an $88 product to anybody that was willing to try it, that needed to try it. So a very important part of an early part of our success story was that particular strategy, I would say, played a major role in where we landed today.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And eventually you guys launched a subscription. Can you talk us through that, the thinking there, how all that came about?
Yeah, so at the time, subscription was not as popular. There were not very many modules available in the e-commerce sector that allowed you to set up subscriptions. So it was a lot more complicated back in 2013, 14, 15. But subscription is really, like, for example, today, I think 85% of our purchases are subscription, which is pretty phenomenal if you think about it. And that obviously that technology and that change in mindset has allowed us to continue to deliver these products to people. This is a product that doesn't work overnight. And so that was something that we had to help educate our customers, that temper the expectation. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes 3 months, up to six months for you to see the benefits. And that is very challenging today. Consumers are very, very much used to instant gratification. They want instant results, but this is not a problem that happens overnight, nor is there ever a solution that's going to fix that problem overnight. And so we knew that subscription would be a terrific way to reinforce behavior, enabling consumers to subscribe, but obviously allow them to remain on the product and hopefully encourage them to continue to use the product, and knowing that in 3 months or less, they would be tipped over into success.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. So talk to me is around kind of, you did brand partnerships with also doctors and salons, and you also focused on direct to consumer. Why did you choose to avoid retail?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, let me focus on the professional channel. When we first launched, we focused on hair salons, which are retailers, right? And hair salons have their own little retail shops within their salons. Physicians are also retailers. They have their little section where they sell all of their physician endorsed skincare products, our strategy from day one, we had initially targeted hair salons as our primary go-to in the professional channel. We very quickly pivoted to dermatologists because we had opportunities to introduce the product at dermatology conferences and plastic surgery conferences. And so we had been advised that if you want to communicate with physicians, that's the best place to meet them, the best place to network, and you'd have an opportunity to talk about your product in front of physicians. And so while we were running that e-commerce engine in the background, our Georgios and I had really focused on spending a lot of time at these dermatology conferences, a lot of time cultivating these relationships with the physicians, because we knew that an endorsement coming from a dermatologist was priceless, and the halo effect of that was priceless. And so we neglected traditional retail. That was where we really said, let's not focus on retail. Let's protect our professional partners. Let them talk about the product. Let them introduce the product to their patients, to their salon clients. We knew that the benefit of that. I'll give you an example. Today, we're the number one dermatology recommended hair growth supplement in America. We have over 4,000 doctors that sell our products today, and another 2,000-3,000 that endorse it. So we did a very good job penetrating the market, and really we did all the right things. We were able to give the physicians what they wanted. They wanted clinical evidence on the efficacy of the product. At the time, we had launched using clinical studies on the ingredients themselves, but then we made further investments in double-blinded placebo-controlled studies, which were critical to have in order to have credibility within the physician network. Today we have 5 clinical trials, double-blinded randomized placebo-controlled studies on our core products. So this is something that we took very seriously. Physicians were endorsing the product from the very, very early days, thanks to a handful of those key opinion leaders that were using it. So anecdotally, they were reporting great results. And so we saw this as really the foundation of the brand, as science, the integrity of the product has to come from science. We needed to make those investments. We needed the endorsements of the scientific community. And we were able, in a very, very short period of time, able to get that endorsement and get that support.
Yeah, smart. So I'd love to switch gears and talk about funding, Roland. Can you talk to us your experiences? How much money did you end up raising? And yeah.
It's funny because neither Georgios nor I knew how to raise money. We knew nothing about raising money. We didn't have a network of banker friends and VC friends, so we self-funded, and then we went out and raised money from friends and family. In some cases, these were friends and family that we hadn't even asked for money. People were saying, "What are you up to?" And we would share our story and tell them what we were working on, and people would say, "Can I invest? Do you need money?" Which was so heartwarming to see that people want, if people want to help, people want to support you. If people believe in you and love you, they're going to support you. They're going to find a way to help you. And so we were able to raise, I think we raised about $800,000-$900,000 from friends and family. And then we went out, and maybe 2 years later, we went out and did our Series A, and I think at the time it was a valuation of about $10 million. And so that was, it was almost 3.5 years in, I believe, when we pulled the trigger on the Series A. Yeah, actually 4 years. I'm sorry. It was 4 years in. We went out at a $10 million valuation. I think at the time we had maybe $3.5 million in annual sales. So like $300,000 a month at that point. So it was very, very slow to get off the ground. You know, by any standard, you know, 3 years in, you're doing $300,000 a month. That's not a big number. But again, it's a very, very challenging sector. One of the things that I can share with your audience is how important it is to fiscal responsibility. And startups, founders, very often, when somebody writes a big check, it gives us an excuse to burn cash. We're not as thoughtful, we're not as careful as we would have been when we were strapped for cash. And now suddenly I think that's a very common practice in the startup world. And so really one of the keys to our success is that we were very, very strategic in how we spent money. We were very frugal. We weren't penny wise and pound foolish. We were just smart and efficient. Efficient is probably the right word. We were very efficient in how we spent our money. And so we were able to create a business that always had a very good runway. We always planned a good 24 months of cash. And so we always had that 2 year runway, and it always allowed us enough time to think about what did our next raise look like? What does a raise look like? If we raised another $20, $30, $40 million, what does that do to the cap table? How does that impact us as founders? How does it dilute us? What does that look like if you have to do a Series B, a Series C? And so we were very smart in that we were always able to forecast what a future raise would look like and how that would impact our ownership 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. So in the end, we ended up doing a Series A and a Series B. The Series B, I think we raised about $35 million at a valuation of about $135 million. And that was it. We never had to raise any more money after that. So we were very, very lucky.
We'll move to the hot seat round. This is rapid fire questions and answers. So what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
People say time time is money, but money is time. With some cash, you can actually buy time, and that support in an early startup is priceless.
What's the worst piece of advice you've ever been given?
Raise more money. What are you doing? Raise more money, hire more people. Hire more people was a good advice, but it was raise more money. You need more money. And I didn't take the advice. I knew that it was not good advice.
You talked about stress earlier. How do you reduce stress?
I take my Nutrafol. I've got ashwagandha I do a little bit of everything. So I have a yoga practice, so I'm able to alleviate some of that stress there. I do have stress adaptogens in Nutrafol. I'll take ashwagandha to help me with that. That's probably the two best ways that I would say that I do that. I also just bought a slow wave chair, one of these chairs that uses sound and vibration to reset your vagal nerve. And so that also helps with the stress.
Interesting. What's something you've learned today?
So my mom's visiting, and she's here for a week, and she hasn't been feeling well. And I realized that despite the fact that she has had lots of physicians, that she's seen a few doctors over the last few months, trying to get to the source of her low energy, et cetera, I realized that a second opinion is highly encouraged. I encouraged her to get some blood work with some local biohackers that are in the functional medicine arena. To help us do a little deeper dive and a little more detective work. So I think that the learning there is, don't assume that great doctors are always going to find the answers, that you should always get that second opinion, look at things from a more holistic point of view.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Last question. If you could have dinner with any entrepreneur, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Could it be Tesla? Is Tesla an entrepreneur, or was he an inventor? It's like, what happened? How did you not? I would say that's probably a good. I'm curious. I'm always curious as to why a business fails, why things don't work for an entrepreneur. I always like understanding the why. And really getting to the root of that. I think there's great learnings in failure, and that's something that I would say would be an important takeaway in these conversations.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, look, thank you so much for your time, Roland, and also congratulations on all your success. I look to further to checking out the product myself. If you can't see, I'm actually taking a finasteride as well. So there you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You wouldn't know, right?
You've got great hair. You've got great hair, Nathan. But happy to send you some.
Oh, that would be amazing. Oh, definitely take up on that offer. I'll give some to my mum too.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time. Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.